returning as a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 67 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassina, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levitsy, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. In the vein of our 52 episodes, it's time to discuss some brand new day. Chris Gallo, webhead on the forums, joins Brent and I to go in-depth on the first couple of months of brand new day, up until the first Mike Vacone issue. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 67 of Comic Timing. And now that you've got the 22 pages out of the way, let's go on and talk some brand new day. And wow, that rhymed. I didn't even try to. We're joined here by the co-host, not co-host, co-host, who is secretly plotting to take over the podcast. It is Brent Cassina.
No, now it's not a secret anymore. You ruined it.
Ha ha.
Bastard. Killed my Kenny.
I killed your Kenny?
I'm just going to personalize this thing.
Could have been said in so many different ways, and yet you choose to do, you killed my Kenny, you bastard.
Well, it can be interpreted any way you want.
Hi, Brent.
What is my Kenny?
Hi, Brent. How are you? We're also joined by Chris Gallo, webhead on the forums, his third time on a Comic Timing related show, second time on Comic Timing. But anyway, howdy.
Hello.
Hi,
hey, Brent.
What's up, Chris?
Not much. Same old, different day.
Yes, on the opposite side of the coast where it's only 7:30.
Bastard.
Here it is, all 10:36, and we're just like, yeah, man, your night's just getting started.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so after this, I'll finish up here and go out and have some fun.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Bastard.
And this episode of Comic Timing is sponsored by Heroes Corner over at heroescorner.com, and they've got their brand new July discounts out, so let me go to the specials first. The special for the month of July is the 1776 special. Now, in order to celebrate both the first year of Heroes Corner and the celebration of July 4th earlier this month, Heroes Corner has a special that is out of this world. For every $17.76 spent at Heroes Corner, you will get one free comic book. So, for example, if you spend $17.76, you get one free comic. $35.52 will get you two. $53.28 will get you three. You get the idea. So you're getting free comics on them in honor of July 4th, which is pretty damn cool. And congratulations to Heroes Corner for making it to 1 year, because that's pretty damn sweet as well. The other special of the month for Heroes Corner is if you buy two graphic novels, trade paperback or hardcover, and the latest monthly title to go along with those hardcovers, you'll get the monthly title for free. Say, for example, if you were to buy a J. Michael Straczynski hardcover, and then you go and buy, say, for example, the Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus or something like that, well, then you're going to be able to get the issue of Amazing Spider-Man that you buy from Heroes Corner for free. So a whole bunch of free comics for you this month over at heroescorner.com if you go buy their specials. And our specials for the month for Heroes Corner, if you use the promo code Brooklyn, that's B-R-O-O-K-L-Y-N, for the month of July, you're going to get 5% off on your first time order at Heroes Corner. So all you guys going there for the first time, you get the benefit. That's Brooklyn, B-R-O-O-K-L-Y-N. And our Comic Timing special discounts of the month, the books that we're going to be covering, Avengers The Initiative number 17, will get an extra 10% off of its usual 40% discount, so it'll be 50% off. Regular price of $2.99 will only be $1.79. Blue Beetle number 31 gets the same discount, so it will also be $1.79. And Back to Brooklyn number 1 will get the extra discount this month. It'll be 75% off. So the regular price is $3, and the Comic Timing special price is 75 cents. So once again, make sure to enter in the notes section, Comic Timing special discount, to get these additional deals this month from Heroes Corner, and I thank them tons and tons and tons for sponsoring us, heroescorner.com. Well, anyway, we're talking brand new day in this episode, as I previously stated, and this is what the forum thread says. Similar to how we handled 52, it's time to go in depth on the thrice-monthly Amazing Spider-Man up until now. How has the brain trust been working for you? Is there one writer you like better or worse than the others, or do you see the title as completely communal effort? Who has been your favorite art team? Is it jarring to go through so many art teams in such a short span of time, or is it part of the allure of the title? Does the current supporting cast appeal to you, and what are you looking for from a Spider-Man book? Of the new villains, who works the best for you? Where do you want to see Amazing Spider-Man go over the next half year? And finally, was it all worth it? We've got plenty of questions to ask in this, so let's go nice and general first and then work our way to the more specific. And we'll start with the guest, Chris. How has Brand New Day been treating you so far?
I don't know. I guess best way to put it would be it is sort of serviceable. It's okay. It's not bad, but it's not outstanding.
Okay. Is it better than Amazing Spider-Man was before Brand New Day and One More Day?
No.
So you were a fan of the JMS and the whole Totem thing, I assume.
I liked a lot of his storylines. All of them weren't perfect, but he did some really good stories. He kept me entertained. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that I didn't believe the spider totem thing, and I didn't, of course, didn't care for the whole Gwen Stacy debacle.
No one did. That never happened.
No, exactly. But he did tell good stories. There were a few that were a little, I don't want to say clunkers, but they could have been better. But I've yet to see anything from this new brain trust that's been better than any of the best of his stories.
Okay. Well, I'll throw the same question over to Brent here. Have you been enjoying Brand New Day better than Amazing before?
I think so, yes. To me, like, I've never been more excited to read Spider-Man. Like, when I get my box from whichever comic company I'm ordering from, Heroes Corner now, DCBS then, hint, plug. but I always pull the Spider-Mans to the top because I want to read them. And he was never used to be like that. I'd put it after JLA or something. Now I'm probably going to pull Trinity to the top if it's good. But, you know, Countdown sucked, so the books I pulled to the top and read first were the Spider-Man ones, followed by the Batmans and the JLAs and all that other stuff. So it's been pretty good. Every time I pulled to the top, I haven't been disappointed, except for Bob Gale and Freak.
Well, yeah, and that's been the down part so far, but I think he's been redeeming himself. Those first couple of issues he did were sort of iffy, but the later ones, I don't know. He seems to be getting more in the groove, and that's after what we're talking about here, because the McCone stuff has been good. I didn't like that one fill-in issue he did previously, and now we're back with, I guess, more of him. So I don't know. Hopefully he'll be on par with the rest of the Brain Trust as time goes on. Mm. And I'll go back to Brent here, actually. It's been at the top of your stack. Now, is that mainly because you're just incredibly curious to see what's going to be happening next, or is it just because it's been better than the rest of the books that you've been reading?
I wouldn't say it's been better, but just because I'm curious. Like, I want to see what's going on, and it's nice to have a Spider-Man book, you know, to read every time I pull my box out.
Right.
Amazing Spider-Man used to be the only one I got. It's still the only one I get, but I never got Spectacular or Friendly Neighborhood, as I've said on the show many times before, just because it didn't interest me, and because they're not the main Spider-Man book.
Right.
Everything in this book matters to Spider-Man, and that's what I want to know. I don't want to read the side stories, you know? If I'm going to read Spider-Man, I'm going to read the Spider-Man book. So I'm just curious to see what's going on, and, you know, there's still the mystery surrounding Mary Jane and who Jackpot is, which kind of got wrapped up. So, you know, I'm not satisfied with it every time I pull it out of the box first, but most of the time I am.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mine, I've been kind of doing the opposite. It used to always be the top of my stack. I mean, every week when I got my books, it would be moved right to the top. Rarely did it ever get pushed back a second. It was only maybe if there was some special event going on or something like that. But it's been slowly moving its way down my pile. I'm still interested, but I just, like I said, it's not holding me anymore. It's not like, oh my God, I got to see what's happened next.
Well, Chris, you've got more of a history with the books than we do, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I guess that might be the reason for you, I assume. But for me, even though I've been reading them since the 90s, even though I was into it, you know, obviously starting with the Clone Saga, which has sort of been swept under the rug now, obviously, unless you read Spider-Girl, and that's another story for another time. You know, I enjoyed the JMS stuff. However, I've just been a lot more accepting of what's happened here because even though I enjoyed Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, even though I enjoyed most of JMS's stuff, there was some stuff that threw me off a bit. this seems to be a very consistent Spider-Man for me, as opposed to reading Friendly Neighborhood and knowing that a lot of it isn't going to matter in the end because it was basically off in its own world. Even though it had a great supporting cast, even though it had great art, consistent art with Todd Knock and Peter David writing was exceptional, it was off in its own world. And the only book that actually mattered every single month in the realm of Marvel Comics was Amazing Spider-Man with JMS. And his writing was always so hit and miss with me. He'd have one arc on the title that I would thoroughly enjoy, and then there'd be another one that he would do where I'd just be barely hanging on by a thread. I dropped Amazing Spider-Man for a while before Back in Black, and actually before The Other, because The Other is where I really picked it up again, but which is, you know, a shame for me because that was not nearly as good as I thought it was going to be. But for a while there, I had dropped Amazing Spider-Man. It just wasn't interesting to me. And I didn't pick up Spectacular, even though I know that a lot of people said it was good, but it just wasn't the book for me at the time because it was another one of those ancillary titles that I could do without. And now, three times a month, I'm getting a story in Amazing Spider-Man that hooks me in.
No, I could, you're probably not alone in that. I've heard that from a lot of people, the fact, you know, more people were buying just Amazing. They weren't buying Friendly, Spectacular, or any of the other titles over the years. So you're not alone there. I understand that. It's just, for me, what I'm seeing in this, none of the stories have really, like, really grabbed me. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been like I said, they've been serviceable. They've been good stories. They've been fun stories. And, for some reason, I can get in a big 70s vibe from these books. You know, there's a lot of two-story arc, mm-hmm. nothing too dramatic, which is fine. You know, I enjoyed those stories, but there's just been nothing that really just said, like, oh my gosh, I gotta see what's gonna happen next.
Right.
You know, so, and unfortunately, there's been a lot of other good comics out there, so they've been drawing my attention more. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not gonna ever stop buying Spider-Man.
Right.
I've got too many years invested in too many books, that I'm not gonna stop, but it's just, like I said, right now, it's just not, like, it's not holding my interest.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to go along the lines of that, actually, I do agree with you with the 70s vibe, that mm-hmm. it's more along the lines of classic Spidey. And mm-hmm. it might also be because I didn't read a lot of the classic Spider-Man. I mean, I've read stories from the 70s and 80s, but because I wasn't a thorough collector at that point, and because a lot of it's in trade and I just don't have them yet, it might just be I'm experiencing a Spider-Man that other people might have already experienced, but I haven't yet.
Right. The only thing is, though, it's not really truly like a 70s Spider-Man book. It's almost a bad imitation of a 70s book.
Okay.
It's like, if you were to ask somebody, what was it like Spider-Man in the 70s, they would say, oh, there were all these things, you know, he would run out of his webs, you know, he would do this, he'd crack all these jokes. And it was like somebody had listened to somebody comment on all that and said, okay, we got to stick all this in there. And they're sort of overdoing it. He's run out of webbing or had problems with a web shooter so many times. He's had this problem. He has this. It's like a bad imitation. I guess that's the best way I can explain it. You know, but I mean, for somebody like you who've never read those books, you wouldn't. You know, I can understand why you're saying, well, you know, I'd never read too much of them, and I liking them. Mm-hmm. I'm liking them too. Don't get me wrong. Just like I said, I just see that. It seems like somebody's like saying, well, you asked for this, so here it is.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and actually, I'll turn to Brent here for a minute. Is it overcompensation for you, Brent, in any aspect? Because I know that you, even though you're not that familiar with the earlier Spider-Man, there are a lot of aspects in this that do call back to that. I mean, are they trying too hard to get a classic Spider-Man here?
I can't say for certain because I've never read anything past JMS's run, you know, like religiously or anything like that, you know? So I can't say. But I will say something that I just think it's nice to get Spider-Man back on a regular basis. Whether it's once a month or three times a month, at least Amazing, you know, for the past 2 or 3 years has been sidetracked due to other artists' woes. Civil War Spider-Man got sidetracked because of Steve McNiven, and they put the delay on that book. So that 6 arc took 9 months to come out, you know, the 6 book arc. And then the next Back in Black one, seemed like it took fucking forever for that to come out. Mm-hmm. Probably because Joe Quesada wasn't even ready with his first issue. Mm-hmm. And Joe Quesada's had 2 years to draw that shit. Or at least a year to draw 4 books. Come on, dude. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah,
so it's just nice to see it back in the box or back on the shelf on a regular basis and not go, wow, it's been 2 months or 3 months since I've had a Spider-Man fix, like it was when we got One More Day.
Yeah, and it's nice to have that almost once a week thing. That's a really nice feeling. I like that a lot.
Yeah, and the way that I noticed it the most was recently IO9 had a thing on DiDio. And somebody had asked, they just brought up Quesada and Marvel and how, you know, Brand New Day seems like their attempt to sort of equalize things and bring it back to the forefront, just like Dio's trying to do certain things over at DC right now. And one of the people asked, you know, is Amazing Spider-Man doing better than the previous Spider-Man books? And I went back and I looked. Using John Mayo's charts on his site, so obviously want to give him a plug on there. Definitely go to comicbookpage.com and check out everything he has there, because he does an amazing job of actually collecting all his data. But I went back and I tried to take a look at April and May of last year, and I found that I believe it was May, or it could have even been the April ones, where not all three titles came out. It was definitely May. I'm remembering this now, that May there was no Amazing Spider-Man. There was Friendly Neighborhood and Spectacular, both of which did about 50,000, and there was no Amazing. And then when you look back at April, there was no Sensational. There was only a Sensational Annual, or Spectacular. All of these damn acronyms. I can't remember which one is which, but I think it was Spectacular at that point. Spectacular Annual came out, and then not the main Spectacular book. I went back to March, and there was all three. And it looked something like this. About maybe 110,000 sold on Amazing Spider-Man. But then about 50,000 on Spectacular and Friendly Neighborhood, which, when you average it out, came out to about somewhere in the 80,000 range for readers and purchases. And again, this is only according to Diamond stuff. Obviously, there's going to be more stuff involved that Diamond isn't going to cover, but that's what those charts said. Right now, that's around where Amazing is. But the only difference is that Amazing is consistently at the 80,000 mark. It'll be at maybe 87,000, followed by an 85,000 and an 83,000, which is, in general, the same range. But you're not getting that major drop-off you had between the other two books and the main book. In essence, this has been the win that Marvel has been hoping for so far.
Other two books 30,000 in sales, basically.
Right. And even though Amazing might have dropped a little bit, it's the mean that matters. And the mean is definitely around the same part.
But do you wonder if they would have had the same effect if they didn't do Brand New Day and just went to Amazing three times a month, if they just kept the same continuity?
That's a good question, and I think they very well might have. You know that this was definitely editorial edict that, you know, Quesada wanted it his way, and that's the way they went, and that's why we got, you know, One More Day and Brand New Day, and they brought on the new writers and artists. I think had you have put the new writers and artists onto this and made it three times a month, it would have been around the same part. However, there was a lot of baggage going into Amazing Spider-Man at that point. And, you know, you guys can chime in on this, you know, however you want, because I know that at least going from the JMS stuff, a lot of changes were put into Spider-Man there, where Spider-Man wasn't quite the recognizable character that he should be in the eyes of readers. You know, I mean, you had like major changes to his powers going on. You know, you had those frickin' stingers, which were, you know, crazy and ridiculous and barely ever showed up in any of the other titles other than, you know, JMS's main one. You know, you had the organic web shooters, which, you know, came in the movies and they brought them in, so I guess you can say that that's okay. And then you got not that many villains showing up. I mean, even though you had Spider-Man, a lot of the storylines that were taking place in Amazing, specifically, were taking place with things happening to Spider-Man, but no villains being behind it. You know, the last maybe year to 2 years of Spider-Man before this were all something happened to Peter and he's dealing with it. Whether it be Aunt May getting shot, whether it be his powers changing, whether or not it be troubles with Mary Jane. It was all
Civil War, the Registration Act.
Right. There were no straight up Spider-Man stories where Spider-Man faces a villain. the villain seemed to have been circumstance as opposed to a villain.
Yeah, but a lot of that was kind of almost because of what they knew they were going to do. I remember reading in an interview with Quesada that how the reveal of Secret Wars was done because they knew they were going to do this. Mm-hmm. It was almost like, well, let's go ahead and screw with the character because we're going to erase all this when we get to One More Day, Brand New Day.
I'm still not sold on that. I'm really still not sold on that being the true reason behind it. I think that was an afterthought, but...
Well, I remember, he said that about... I know for a fact he said that about the reveal. Mm-hmm. He said he wasn't afraid to do that because they knew they had their out. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how much more you could say that they thought of that. The web, organic web shooters, was that part of the equation or not? I can't say. But I do know for the fact the reveal was something he said in an interview. Pick it for what you want. I mean, maybe part of the reason they went down that road was because they said, well, we have gotten out. We're gonna do this eventually.
Well, going back to what you said about, would this be successful if it was the old continuity? I don't think it would be at all. I think the Brand New Day gimmick is what's getting people to come to this title 3 times a month. If you had JMS writing this 3 times a month, people might not pick it up.
Well,
that we're getting a fresh writer each month or every 3 stories or whatever it is, a fresh new art team, like those JMS stories just seem to drag on and on and on, just the story arcs themselves, and here stuff's happening every issue.
Okay,
it's because it's 3 arcs or a different writer every time. I don't know.
But how? What would happen? And, this is all us speculating, and, we would never know whether this is true or not, but we're not even saying here JMS 3 times a month. We're saying same writers, same artists, just no One More Day, Brand New Day. Would it still be on top?
I'm thinking it would because the numbers reflect how it was before, right? Mm-hmm. I'd almost say it would probably be about where they are right now. Maybe a little bit better, maybe a little bit less, but not by much because, right. Like I said, the numbers reflect this is sort of before all the events start happening. This is where the numbers were. So I mean, it looks like they may have picked up a few and lost a few, but it's pretty much still that same group of hardcore Spider-Man fans that are still buying this.
And Brent, I know that you mentioned the JMS thing, but yeah, what would happen with the new writers and artists as opposed to, just JMS writing it 3 times a month?
I don't know. It might be the same level, and I don't think it would be just as successful as it is now because of the Brand New Day thing is kind of making people pick it up and saying what's different, and what's new. But if it was just the same continuity, they might pick it up on a regular basis, but just on a lesser level. This Brand New Day basically is a gimmick,
Right.
So, I don't know. What I was trying to say was Spider-Man is one of the most popular characters. So people are going to pick this up whether it was good or not, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that to a point because there were 100,000 people picking up Amazing on a regular basis. And about half of those people were picking up the other two books. So now you've evened it out a little bit, and you still have those same people involved. A lot of those same people, like you were saying previously, Chris. A lot of those same people are there. They just are evening out their spending a little bit.
Right, you used to just get Amazing, and also you, Brent, you weren't getting the ancillary titles.
Right.
Now, me, who I was getting all the titles, so I just now I'm still getting all the titles, but only Amazing, but I'm getting it 3 times a month. Yeah. So, yeah, it just sort of evened it out. But, that's my thought. I have not seen any dramatic increases in sales. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of evened out. Like I said, I really think that if they had gone with the same art team, maybe with the old continuity, it'd probably be about the same, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less, but it wouldn't be that much noticeable. I think Brand New Day, the concept behind is just bad, but you know what? Sometimes bad is good, I guess you might want to put it.
Well, get that cosmic mirror working, and let's get a view into another universe where they did the same writer and artist thing, but no One More Day, Brand New Day. Let's see how that's going. But anyway, let's switch over a bit to favorites and not-so-favorites, but hopefully just mainly favorites here. Give me your favorite writer of the bunch right now, of the Brain Trust, and how significantly better was this person the rest of the brain trust? I mean, do you specifically think in your mind, oh, this one person is the best and the others are behind it? Or this person is the best and the brain trust is still good? I guess that's the best way that I'm trying to put it here. And we'll start with Brent.
For me, it's got to be Dan Slott. I mean, it might be biased because he's already had two arcs himself. But there's a reason they put his story first. There's a reason why they let him write the first story and the first arc that you knew everyone was going to read because, you know, what's different? You know, it's because he's the better writer. And he gets it. He gets Spider-Man. Everything in that first issue is like – what's the first issue number? The 546, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything in there is pretty good, whether you don't like what's going on or not. You can read that and go, okay, yeah, that's Spider-Man right there in a nutshell. What, you know, even if he wasn't in costume in the issue, he got Peter Parker down and Aunt May and, you know, Harry Osborn. And I just thought that everything in that first issue was just correct. It was just like, wow, this, you know, this is the Spider-Man that's in the movies. And this is the Spider-Man that's in, you know, kind of reflected in Ultimate Spider-Man. Dan Slott gets it, basically. So I'm going to have to pick him. And that even carried over into the Marcos Martin issues that we had last month.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
so for him, I guess he's the best.
Okay, but and does the brain? I mean, when thinking of the brain trust, I mean, do you see his influence on the rest of the issues?
I don't know whether I can say it, that anything. A lot of, you know, Seb Wells, Bob Gill. I've read Guggenheim. I've read his Wolverine stuff, and I like that.
Okay, hold up. I'm like totally losing you right now. Do you have anything running in the background?
What, did I cut out?
Yeah.
Was it this?
It was very jumpy and jivey and like not all, like all over the place. Are you hearing me okay right now?
Yeah, I'm hearing. Oh fuck, the updates thing showed up.
Okay.
Downloading updates. That's what will probably happen.
Okay.
I shut this off.
Chris, talk a little bit just to make sure that I can hear you okay.
Sure. Yeah, I was hearing the same thing. He was getting real choppy there, okay. But I heard you clearly through the whole thing.
Okay, good. Then it's definitely on Brent's end. I just wanted to make sure because. All right.
I don't know how I make it stop downloading these automatic updates.
It's that they're automatic.
There's no pause or anything.
They're automatic for a reason. So.
I'm hearing the, like periodically some kind of chime in from somebody's computer.
Wait,
I don't know if it was like, you know, I sound like a Windows machine, that blink sound.
Huh. That's weird. Okay, hold on.
You sure that's not your machine?
Yeah. No?
I'm running a Mac and we don't make those in the sound.
Hold on. Let me lure myself a little bit here, just a teensy bit. Okay, Brent, talk a little bit here first.
Talking. I just thought Dan Slott rules and.
Yeah.
Ian can suck my dick, and I mean, blah, blah, blah. I mean, can you hear what I'm saying?
Fuck off, die in a fire. Yeah, I can hear you fine.
So it's probably just because they just turned on.
Okay, yeah.
Well, and that says they're done, so.
I mean, you're still a little shaky, but hopefully that'll even itself out a little bit. But anyway, yeah, let me go back to asking you what I asked you before, and we'll just roll it back from there. I know that. You know, Slott is your favorite, but I mean, do you see his influence more than others in the brain trust itself?
I can't really say that because the only Slott stuff I've read is the Avengers Initiative he's done. The only Guggenheim I've read is his Flash, which was awesome, and the Wolverine stuff I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
Wells, I haven't read anything by. Gales, I haven't read anything by, so I can't. The brain trust to me just says editorial, basically,
okay.
Without being editors. You know, they know where the story wants to go, and they're the guys calling each other up to say, hey, I have this idea. When can we do this, and who can write this? And the editors will intervene and say, I think this person's more suited for that plot point or whatever, but it's a great idea. Thanks for coming up with it. But they're just the research team to me. That's what that means.
Because they're saying that it's a little bit more like the 52 way of writing. As in, they all pull their ideas together, and then an issue gets written.
I mean, I don't. That sounds more like Countdown because they have one writer credited on the front of the book.
True, I guess. Yeah, although it's certainly better than Countdown. So
much better.
So I'm thinking there is a little bit more of a soundboarding going back and forth as opposed to just one person plotting, and then the rest, you know, writing. I think that this is everybody plotting, and then the person writes.
Yeah,
which is a little bit different. Chris, what about you? Who is your favorite of the bunch, and do you feel their presence more than others in the Brain Trust?
I'm with Brent on this one. Dan Slott's been my favorite. Exactly what he said. You know, they went with their strength first. While they knew he was going to be the most popular one, and they went with him, and he didn't let me down. As for the Brain Trust, I'm going to say I don't feel his presence separately, but I think they're doing a really good job of making Spider-Man feel the same across the books.
Right.
The stories a little bit, to me, seem to be a little choppy. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit thread running through them all that you could see from one writer to the other, but the stories don't seem to really connect. Mm-hmm. But the characters are staying true, which is good. Good
it's
to
important.
See. Yeah, it is very important. I mean, I'd hate to see Spider-Man written one way and then suddenly go darker in the next writer and then go more humorous in the next. No, he seems to be holding a steady pace. So it seems like the Brain Trust is working. It sounds like they've gotten together. They've really hashed out the character the way they want to write it as a group. And then they have, and then of course they've tinkered with each other's stories, helped out, so there is that flavor across the board. But you definitely can, for story wise, like I said, that's the only thing. It seems like everybody's telling their stories, and they're going from one to the next, and it's okay. It seems it's not too jarring, but I definitely feel that they're working as a team.
It is more 52 to me than Countdown because there's a communal voice going on. What I felt in Countdown, and I'm not going to compare it that much to Countdown here. I'm just going to make this quick point and then roll on. But in Countdown, when a different writer wrote an issue, the characters felt different. And I'm not getting that here with Amazing.
No, it's like 52.
Right. It's a lot more consistent, and it feels more like one book. As for the writers, I'm going to agree that Dan Slott's been my favorite so far. But in a close second, it's a shame because I know that he's no longer going to be writing after that one arc he had. He's got other things to do right now, is Zeb Wells. Because Zeb Wells is a very humorous guy, and he's got the writing chops. He hasn't done that much. His New Warriors that I read was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed that a great deal. But he made me enjoy a Chris Bachalo issue. So that gives him props because Chris Bachalo is so hot and cold for me. I mean, I've made the point like 500 times here on Comic Timing that usually he does better when he's rushed. And I know that he actually had time to actually draw this. So I was kind of afraid of what it was going to turn out to be. But he took that extra time, I think, to craft it a bit and didn't do those crazy angles he always ends up doing in his issues, so it worked out. But definitely Zeb Wells will be second for me, followed by Guggenheim and then Gale. But Gale could very well end up on top. And once Mark Waid joins the fray here, I think he's going to be on top of everybody.
Yeah.
Because he's freaking Mark Waid.
yeah, exactly. But you're not alone with the Bocello artwork. I'll just put it to you that way. So I agree with you on that point, but I think I liked Guggenheim neck after Slott, but I just keep going back to that comment about Chris's artwork.
Well, it's true though. I mean, come on,
it is.
I don't talk false here on Comic Timing. So. What can I say? Oh, man. But, I mean, it was an enjoyable issue, and I could actually follow the artwork. So, hey, that's good. And that'll lead me into my next point here. Give me your favorite artist so far, and has it been jarring to go from artwork to artwork to artwork? Because there have been many different styles presented here. Not everybody has a consistent thing. It's one thing if you have sort of along the lines of a 52 or one of those. And I got to stop comparing it to a 52 because I know that's a different animal. But, you know, where you had mostly similar art and you had like one or two in there like a Derek Robinson where it was just like, whoa. But here you're going from, you know, Barry Kitson to Phil Jimenez to Chris Bachalo to Steve McNiven, Salvador Roca, all totally different styles. And usually you would expect things to be a bit more consistent. That's not what we've been getting here. It's been very different styles, very different changes. But has it been a problem for you guys? And we'll start with Chris on this one. Give me your favorite artist, and has it been a problem?
My favorite is going to be Phil Jimenez. I like his that classic comic book art style. Mm-hmm. It's funny, now that I think about it, you do see the differences. It's glaring, the differences in the style of artwork, but because the writing has been, they've gotten the characters down consistent. It doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. And I just look at I like Steve McNiven's Next, and I'm like, you could obviously see the difference between the two, but
oh, sure.
It hasn't been that jarring because of the way the writing has been consistent,
and
the characters, and maybe because the stories feel slightly disconnected,
okay,
that it's not been that bad. It's minimized it, I should say.
So in other words, because the stories are done in one, you don't feel it nearly as much. If it was an overarching arc, that'd be another problem.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it'd be like when they have a fill-in artist. You're like, oh, what the heck's this? And whereas in this case, where it's like sort of like they sort of end, and then there's a sort of new story, but because the characters are so consistently similar, Peter's been Peter through all these books. It's like it minimizes that, and almost to the point where you don't really notice it. You sort of like you start with the first issue, you're like, oh, okay, it's now this guy. And then within about halfway through the book, I sort of like, okay, I've just sort of accepted it and I've moved on.
Yeah, well, my favorite artist of the bunch, and it surprises me that I'm saying this because I would have never expected with all the talent that's in the art pool so far that Marcos Martin would be my favorite. But wow. I enjoyed a great deal his Doctor Strange miniseries stuff, The Oath, that he did with Brian K. Vaughan writing. And I, other than that, I really hadn't seen anything else from him, so I had no idea what to expect. And you had such a Silver Age classic feel in the artwork with Martin, combined with detailed, gorgeous scenery all throughout. I mean, New York felt the most alive in Martin's artwork as opposed to anywhere else. So that's why I'm going to give him the nod. And I'm going to agree with Chris here that it's not nearly as jarring as I thought it was going to be. Because when you go through so many different artists, if it's maybe a 12-part storyline, then you're going to feel it. But if you have these very controlled 3-part arcs and you switch the artists off at the end of the arc and not in the middle of it, then you're not going to feel it nearly as much. And that's why I've been enjoying the arc consistently in this. I could look at it and say, oh, hey, cool, Jimenez did this one, and just roll on. If the last one was Baklo and you go to Jimenez, it's not going to bother me. And I'm shocked I'm saying that. But, Brent, your turn.
I'm going to have to qualify this. My favorite people is Phil Jimenez, but my favorite Spider-Man has got to be McNiven.
Okay.
Because I would give it to Jimenez, except for that his Spider-Man just looks too flat. Mm-hmm. Like, anytime I see his mask in his face, it looks like he draws the mask the same every time. No matter what angle it's at, it just – the eyes look flat to me. It looks like a piece of paper on the top of Spider-Man's body. The rest of it looks fine. The rest of it's great. It's just the head that bothers me. I don't know why. I don't know if anyone else can see this but me, but it just looks like it's a flat piece of paper every time.
Well,
I don't know if that's the way the eyes are or what.
Well, the way he draws Spider-Man is very McFarlane-esque. And McFarlane...
It's not even that, though. Like, they've had showed some preview pages of... Paolo Sequeira, who's coming up in a couple issues, mm-hmm, and he's really McFarlane-esque in the shit that he's doing, mm-hmm, that I've seen. And just this stuff, it's not McFarlane-esque because it's still Jimenez. Just because the big eyes, I don't think it qualifies as McFarlane-esque.
Well, that's not even just it, though. When you look at the bodies, specifically, like with how lanky Spider-Man is drawn and the poses and stuff like that, I just got a major McFarlane feel. I might just be the only person thinking this, but that's where I drew my comparison. But I will agree, though, that he draws real people with real faces better than he draws Spider-Man.
But McNiven Spider-Man really impressed me because just the stuff that he did in Civil War didn't impress me that much, Spider-Man-wise. Mm-hmm. The rest of it did, but this Spider-Man that he just pulled out there was just amazing. And I love McNiven's faces, but I got to go with Jimenez for real people.
Yeah. and Morey's colors certainly helped on the McNiven art.
Well, you noticed that especially when Dave Stewart jumped on that third issue. Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
the quality level just dropped because Morey wasn't on it.
In fact, could I be straight up here and say the coloring is actually, I think, more jarring to me than the art itself?
Well, I gotta say, with Steve McNiven, it's Morey's coloring that makes his art stand out.
Mm-hmm.
Because we saw with Dave Stewart on him, his art didn't really stand out that much. It was still great, but Morey's facial colors and tones and whatever he adds to McNiven's art, just they stick together like, you know, peanut butter and jelly.
The man's talented. You just can't deny it.
Yeah.
Morey's great.
It's true. And so, I mean, have the art changes been jarring for you, Brent, at all?
I'll have to say no, because of what you guys said, and I was thinking of this before, because they're in such controlled arcs, you know? And they do have, like, the recurring threads of, like, the Spider Tracer killer who we still don't know what the fuck's going on there. But yeah, I think just because it's these separate arcs, that helps a lot.
And mini rant here, and I'm sure you guys have noticed this too, but for the love of God, can you change up the text a little bit on that frickin' article they do on the previously page for the Spider Tracer killer? It has been the same article for the last, like, 10 issues.
Nothing's happened with it, though.
I don't care. If it's supposed to be a newspaper, and a different newspaper every time, because obviously some of the text is different, if you're writing a newspaper, if you're going to have an article about something, they never reuse an article.
All right,
that's nitpicking
Marvel,
on my end.
Marvel, just do this. Still nothing new on Spider Tracer Killer. See last issue's recap page.
Thank you.
Still nothing new on the Spider Tracer Killer. See 545's recap page.
I'd rather
still nothing
that.
New on Spider Tracer Killer. See 546 recap page, which will push you to 545, 44, or whatever the fucking number is, and you'll go back to the first one you read. How's that?
Fine by me.
Or you can do what I do. Just pretend it's another ad for, Transformers, the movie.
Yeah,
or
I don't even
like
read the recap page.
Yeah.
I don't even read that shit. Come on.
So, and I
it's
guess
only a week. Come on, it's not like it's been a month since the issue. It's only been a week. You should be able to remember.
2 weeks, if you're me.
Well, maybe they put the recap page in there for people that read them in bulk. But even that wouldn't make sense. But and you could tell that they know people don't read the previous page because they still put the editor's notes in there.
Mm-hmm.
Which oftentimes repeat what was in the previous page. Specifically, Bob Gale, I'm looking at you. Because that was the most apparent with his stuff. But anyway, we're going off on a tangent here. So let me actually go to the characters here, because obviously that's been a major change as well. We've got nothing but new villains so far. I mean, we've had old characters, like Betty Brant's back in the mix. Robbie's obviously still around. You've had Kirk Connors show up. Not the Lizard, but Kirk Connors. And as of, Marcos Martin's art chores, you had Mary Jane back in the book. And, for at least a little bit there, I'm sure she's going back home now. But apparently she's going to be back for the J.R. Jr. stuff later on, because that's what they've been showing in the artwork. But who has been your favorite new villain up until this point? And here's what's important here. Have they been succeeding with these new villains? I mean, are they all just a cheesy mess for you, or do they actually threaten Spider-Man? And we'll start it off with me, since I haven't actually started off anything yet. I think my favorite up until now has been Menace, even though the character's name is Menace. It hasn't been nearly as cheesy as I thought. It's another Goblin-esque character, sure, but if you're going with a classic Spidey, it has to have a villain like a Green Goblin. If you're not going to use Green Goblin himself or Hobgoblin, then Menace is the next best thing. So I'm going to go with that. Have they been cheesy? Some of them, yes. And Mr. Negative has been another good addition, specifically with his actual identity. I think it's great that you've got someone who's so close to Aunt May that is a villain for Spider-Man, I guess harkening back as well to the days of Doc Ock when he was in that same sort of position. Freak has been, sort of hit, bleh. I can't even put it into words, but Not exactly my favorite so far. The villain that was introduced in the Slot Martin stuff, I forgot what her name was.
Screwball?
Screwball, there you go. Screwball is very fun. And I love her concept, the first live-streaming supervillain. Because in this day and age, you knew somebody was going to do it eventually. So that's cool with me. And plus, you've got Oscorp stuff going on. It's been pretty fun. So some of these villains feel as if you could have very well just replaced them with their previous, you know, non-Brand New Day versions. You know, get a Green Goblin in there, get a Lizard in there. But Mr. Negative has been cool, and Menace has been cool. Freak, not so much. And I'll ask Brent here.
Which villain did I like the best?
Yeah, which did you like the best? And have the villains, in essence, been too cheesy to survive? Or do you think they've been doing a good job?
I didn't like the Freak one. I really liked the one in Zeb Wells, the ethereal Mayan god thing. Mm-hmm. Just because that's not a Spider-Man story, you know?
Right.
And that just made it a really cool Spider-Man story, because it's usually not what you get from Spider-Man.
Well, that was more like a JMS Spidey.
Right, mm-hmm. And that's what I like JMS Spidey, so maybe that was part of it. Mr. Negative hasn't done that much. The DNA blood virus, that was kind of cool. But, I mean, none of them have really done anything. Menace especially hasn't done anything to merit anything of note. All Menace did was fly around and go, ha, 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 Spider-Man. And he even didn't show up until, like, the second issue of his own arc, you know?
Well, Menace did injure...
He did kill the mayor candidate. Yeah. Cut her head off, but not directly. That was an accident.
But it happened.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's still not a memorable villain. I mean, I remember they were promoting this guy as, like, the Spider-Man 4 villain, the next one. He's going to be great. Uh-huh. And he didn't do anything. And Freak just, I hate that concept.
Actually, I think the villain of Spider-Man 4 is going to be dancing.
No.
Dancing with the stars.
You had to go there.
Of course I had to go there, Chris. Come on. When do I not go there?
Wait. Did you like that part, Chris? Come on.
No. That's why I said you had to go there. You had to remind me.
I had fun with it. I admit that. It's just, it was absolutely ridiculous. It was fun walking down the street afterwards with Raph, but it was ridiculous.
Chris, you just said it like in the same tone that Ian always says, you know, when I bring up his hentai dealer, you know?
You fucker. You're making me rethink adding you to the opening, Brent. All right.
I hear Bob Breitel needs another show. He can take Brent's place, no problem.
Yeah, Bob Breitel's the new Man of 1,000 podcast. Come on, he's everywhere. We love him for it, but... So these new characters, in general, I mean, they filled the role of villains decently for you, Brent?
I think so, because they're only three-part arcs, you know? Right. They're certainly not great villains so far. Mm-hmm. The one I did like was Paper Doll. I thought that was kind of cool, because she was creepy.
Yeah.
But that flat thing's kind of been done before. I mean, I don't know.
It's the spot.
We'll see what Anti-Venom happens.
It's the spot for 2008.
Yeah.
Hey. All right, Chris, your turn to riff on the villains a little bit.
None of them have really grabbed me. I guess the one I like the best, and it's not because he's done anything, but I see the potential, is Mr. Negative. I really get an old Magi mobster type feel from him. Mm-hmm. Some of them, like, you know, like Silvermane or something like that. He could easily be the power behind, you know, behind everything. Mm-hmm. I could see him. That's probably the only one out of the bunch so far that I could see will make it out of this.
Okay.
The rest, you know, I didn't care for Menace. He felt like, or she, whatever you, you know, whatever your school of thought is on that.
It's a he. Come on. The idea, and okay, let's just mention this real quick. There's been ideas out there that Menace could very well be Mary Jane. I think that's bullshit.
Yeah. It seems too much of a goblin ripoff. That didn't care. It was like, okay, fine, another one. Screwball was okay. Again, they sort of fall into that White Dragon character line of villains. You know, you're gonna enjoy one or two issues with them and never hear from them again, and won't miss them one bit. Mm-hmm. What's the other one? That girl, the one you mentioned, Brett. Yeah, I'll have to go. She's a bit creepy. but in the, not because she, because of her power, but just the way she was drawn, you know, that emo type looking weird girl.
And we were meant
that
to
no
be
one, no
each
talk
other.
To in the back, who sits in the back of the library.
We were meant to be each other, Chris. We were meant to be together. Hold, let me hold your hand and I'll turn everyone you know into paper.
But, yeah, but like I said, I really think after all said and done, Mr. Negative's probably maybe the only one that's going to come out of this where we might see him again, mm-hmm. but that's how it goes.
I do sort of share your sentiment a little bit, because I could sort of see Mr. Negative perhaps competing a little bit in, like, maybe Hammerhead's territory or mm-hmm. or the Kingpin's territory, and maybe get into that and perhaps even cross over into other books once this whole brand new thing is brand new day thing is done. Maybe showing up in Daredevil or something.
Yeah, or back in Spider-Man, or, you know, even just floating around and maybe like in, if like Moon Knight continues on or something like that. You know, similar. He's going to definitely be a street level villain.
Right. Switching over to the villains, to the accidental villains, if you want to look at it this way, Dexter Bennett and the DB, or as I like to call it, the New York Post of the Marvel Universe.
But this is the Marvel Universe, so they still have a New York Post.
Yeah, I'm scared. So what is it? Yeah, well, where does the Daily Bugle fit in? I mean, I've seen it drawn certain ways where, you know, it's sort of like a Daily News fill-in. I guess it's the New York Times fill-in of the Marvel Universe. What the hell is it? It was at first. I know that now it's more of the Post, but back then it was more of a New York Times type, right?
Right.
Okay. Dexter Bennett comes along and gets rid of J. Jonah Jameson. Let's talk about, number one, the condition of J. Jonah Jameson, and number two, Dexter Bennett as the new boss. What have you been enjoying or not enjoying about Dexter Bennett so far, and where would you like to see J. Jonah Jameson go in the next couple of months? Do you want to see him perhaps try and get the Daily Bugle back, or maybe try and start his own paper elsewhere, or do something else? There are a lot of options for him to go here, but let's start off with the Daily Bugle in general here, and go to Chris.
It really doesn't bother me too much how it's gone. I don't care for the Dexter Bennett character, but I do. It's a bit refreshing, you know, after the way Jonah's always been portrayed as that sort of very negative all the time. This guy's sort of like he makes no bones of the way he is. You know, he's slimy. You know, I guess is the best way to put it. And it's kind of interesting how it's going to turn now. What's been going on with Peter at the Bugle, or the DB? Like I said, what I would like to see is, I think I would like to see Jonah come back, but not start another paper, not, you know, do some hostile takeover and get the paper back some way. Actually, I'd like to see him use his reporting skills and dig up some dirt on Bennett and sort of like force him to sell it back to him, you know, because that would be kind of interesting to see Jonah get out in the field and do some work for a change instead of sit behind a desk just ranting and raving.
Well, plus another possibility here is, well, now there's an opening as, Robbie Robertson quit his job at the end of the Marcus Martin arc. And, well, now there's an opening there. So there is a possibility that perhaps J. Jonah could come a knocking.
Yeah. Or grab Robbie and the two of them, like I said, do Woodward and Bernstein thing where they go dig up all the dirt on Dexter Bennett.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. Do you find the whole routine of of calling Peter like Peter Parkinson, or you know, Robbie like Robbie Robinson, or Betty Brandon, or Betty Branson, or stuff like that? I mean, do you find that amusing or is it tiresome?
It was cute at first, but it just got old. But it wasn't annoying old. It was just sort of like, okay, just see it again, you know. Just sort of blew past it after a while, so it didn't bother me.
I did like the way they used it, though, because he didn't know Peter Parker's name until Peter made an enemy of him. And then he'll never forget his name. So in that aspect, it was a good way of doing it.
Yeah, but it is nice seeing the Bugle in the DB now. It's sort of refreshing because that was something that was missing in all those in the J. Michael series. Mm-hmm. You know, because the Bugle is a character on its own.
Oh, sure.
A supporting character, and it was. It's nice to see that back, and it's, you know, it's not all bad. I mean, Betty's moving up in the world, so that's good to see. But you know, like I said, if it's no Bugle or having to put up with a DB, I think I'd rather put up with a DB than not have the Bugle at all in any of in the stories.
Yeah, yeah, because you get it, more characters involved with the Bugle there.
Right.
Yeah.
The DB stuff I thought was interesting. I don't know why it's ending now. I thought they could have dragged it out a little more, but hey, maybe we'll get a Spider-Man versus Dr. Bennett thing.
Well, I don't think it's over, and that's what, yeah, I was trying to mention to Chris. I think that J. Jonah Jameson might very well fill Robbie's role in order to try and get some dirt on Dexter
as editor in chief.
Yeah, yeah,
maybe. I can't see him like doing that though. He's going to send someone in to get the dirt. J. Jonah Jameson's not going to go, well, I'm going to be the publisher and the owner of the paper to editor-in-chief under his rival. Fuck no.
It's still
that man's got like an ego as big as like Ron Jeremy's penis. I don't know. It's huge.
Wow.
There's no way.
Yeah. Thanks for putting it directly that way, by the way, because now I just have terrible, terrible thoughts.
You've seen some weird hentai. I'm sure you've seen bigger things. You know?
Anyway.
Oh,
dear. But isn't that the best way, though, to like try and keep your baby alive by getting into the Bugle in one way or another? And even if he is under his rival, perhaps, you know, slowly working it until he gets his way back. Because, I mean, he did similar things when Norman Osborn was in charge back in the 90s.
If you love it, set it free.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. I will say that the remembering or forgetting the name Peter Porkinson or whatever kind of got old, mm-hmm, after 9 issues, but that was kind of cool in the last Marcos Martin issue where he's like, Peter Parker, I forget the name of my employees, but I never forget my enemies.
Right. Yes.
If he was from Transformers, that what he would have sounded like.
But, Megatron! Good job on the sound effect right there. Not bad, not bad.
Thank you
very much. Okay, all right. So, yeah, on to supporting characters, as that's been another change here. And we got to talk a little bit about Jackpot, obviously, because, well, she's been kind of huge here. She is New York's member of the 50-State Initiative, and she's been rolling around and stuff. People thought she was Mary Jane, and now apparently she's not. We don't know whether or not the name she gives is a real name, because that's still the name of a character from Jack and Bobby, not a real person. But then again, it's a comic book. He could very well just be reusing a name. But Jackpot so far, a good foil to Spider-Man, a good addition to the cast, and what do you want to see out of Jackpot in the future? And we will begin with Mr. Sleepyhead.
I think she's a good addition to the cast. I loved the Mark Guggenheim stuff, and then rereading those after reading the Marcos Martin last issue where he says, "Oh, Mary Jane, I'm your biggest fan. I love that line. You know, you just hit the jackpot, Tiger." And seeing how often she uses Tiger and Jackpot and whatever, and Guggenheim stuff just makes sense. And I thought it was, that tapestry was beautiful.
Yeah. Although,
and she's wearing a redheaded wig because, you know, Mary Jane is her favorite redheaded actress. Come on, it's great.
But
I love it.
But her face looks so much like Mary Jane's.
That's on purpose to make us think that it's Mary Jane.
Yes, I understand that it's on purpose. But did this woman also get plastic surgery to look like Mary Jane? Because it's kind of uncanny how
maybe
much
she puts on a fake nose. I don't know.
It's a fake
nose.
You know,
the only thing that's ever distinguished Mary Jane in the, you know, in the years was the red hair. Mm-hmm. From artist to artist, I'll be honest.
I guess. All right, I'll give you that much. And Jackpot has been a good, I guess, brand new day version of, say, like the atmosphere that you would get behind like a Black Cat and stuff like that. I know that Black Cat's probably eventually going to be back in this, but there needs to be some sort of romantic foil for Spider-Man when he's in his Spider-Man garb, as opposed to just Peter Parker. And that's what Jackpot presents. And him believing that it's Mary Jane also brings the aspect of, is my ex-girlfriend, you know, running around the city as a superhero now? What the hell do I do? And obviously we know that that's not the case now, but he doesn't know that. So he's going to treat her differently than he would, say, just any random member of the initiative. So I think that we're going to get more team-ups with her. I'm not sure if Peter's going to know her identity right off the bat yet, but maybe within the next 3 or 4 months he'll find out the truth. So that's what I've been liking out of her so far. I think that she's a decent addition to the cast. Chris, your take?
Yeah, I agree. She's okay. I mean, I think they're kind of hitting you over the head so much with this. Is she Mary Jane or isn't she? You know, I mean, it's gotten me to believe that she's not going to be Mary Jane because it's just way too many clues saying she is. You know, all the tiger references and how she looks like that. But I definitely like the issues with her in them. They do make they seem a little bit more lighthearted, a little more fun with the two of them. And it was kind of interesting seeing her screw up, I guess you'd say, and Peter, Spider-Man, having to point out why and kind of save the day kind of stuff. It was good. I don't know whether I would want her as a permanent thing, but like I said, definitely it's going to be fun to see her, and I just hope they don't overuse her, I guess. And I guess we're going to find out with coming up the issues with the this Kree Skrull thing. I think those books are going to be mainly about her and the rest of the supporting cast. So we're going to see how well they can write her by herself.
Now, wouldn't it be a bitch if Jackpot, the reason that she looks so much like Mary Jane, is because Jackpot's a Skrull? Now, again, this is just pure speculation here, but perhaps when this Skrull got here, you know, the first thing she did was turn on the TV to try and case out the world a little bit, came across Mary Jane's soap opera, fell in love with it, made her appearance look like Mary Jane, hence why she looks so much like her, and hence why Jackpot is around.
That's a nice one. I like that, actually. I think that would be a good story. Very original.
Thank you. Well, because, I mean, they're mentioning that, you know, they're at one point during this Brand New Day special, the Secret Invasion Brand New Day thing, that they're going to reveal that one of the members of the cast is a Skrull. So that's the one I can think of, at least. I mean, it's not going to be one of the candidates for mayor or something like that. That would be silly.
That could be Dexter Bennett.
Yes, Dexter Bennett. The reason the Skrulls need him involved is so that he can
control the newspapers.
Yeah, control the newspapers and control the media.
And then that's how Jonah gets the paperback, because then he revealed that the Skrull can't own the paper.
Brent, what are the chances you think of Jackpot being a Skrull?
Slim to none. I don't think so. No way.
Would explain her features, though.
Oh, shut up.
Okay, you've got a secret invasion going on. Wouldn't you have at least one of the people in Spider-Man's life turn out to be a Skrull?
Aunt May, come on.
That's possible, because she doesn't look nearly as scary as she used to.
Well, didn't Stan say that he'd make Aunt May a Skrull? That way, when it all comes down to Spider-Man save the day, that he'd have her say, "Oh, Peter, I need my medicine," and he'd have to run and save her instead of saving the world.
No. It's perfect. It's perfect. She's a Skrull, and she's been feeding him poisoned wheat cakes.
Oh.
It all makes sense. It all makes sense.
Yeah. It all comes back to the wheat cakes.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, moving on from there to Harry and his hose, because that's a lovely topic, isn't it? Harry Osborn's back. Good thing or bad thing? I think it's sort of bad for now, because we don't actually have an explanation as to why he's back. I do like his hose a little bit. I mean, Lily Hollister, even though she can be a bit skanky, has been a decent character. And I'm liking Carly a lot. In fact, she's the nice romantic combination for Peter. And obviously, she's the reason why he actually has an apartment right now, because she set him up with his police friend, and they're now rooming together. But yeah, Harry and his hose, yay or nay? Chris Gallo, the floor is yours.
They're okay for now. If Lily disappeared off the face of the earth tomorrow, it wouldn't upset me at all. Carly, I like. I wouldn't mind seeing her come back later on or being a recurring character. She's a nice girl next door type character. I like how, because she's a forensic scientist, she's kind of gives a little kind of an in to what's the workings of the police force for Peter. Mm-hmm. And it makes sense also as a reporter, photographer, that he would have people on the force that he would, you know, use as, like, you know, to give him stories, you know, leads to stories and stuff like that. But like she's a little too Deb Whitman for them to be like a hookup for me. And Lily, like I says, you know, she's okay, you know, but if they decided she breaks up with Harry and takes off, or she's a Skrull, mm-hmm. you know, wouldn't bother me in a bit. You know, it'd be interesting to see if she was a Skrull. I'd be like, oh, cool. And that's about it. But the thing about Harry, though, the fact that they haven't done much with him, but they suddenly just brought him back and they've not explained it, mm-hmm. that's kind of irritating that when you think about it. But it really hasn't been like the forefront of my thoughts, going like, damn it, when am I going to explain about Harry? You know, he had that heroic death, you know, saving Peter, Spider-Man, and now they negated all that with him back. You know, it just sort of laying there, just sort of as a plot point to just sort of ignoring, seems to me.
Right, and I mean, I'm not quite sure if they're ignoring it. I think they're putting it off. Mostly because I'm not even sure if they know yet.
That's a scary thought. They're supposed to have known this way before they started all this.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be the first time, right?
Yeah, it probably won't be the last.
Yeah, all right. Brent, your turn. Harry's hose, yay or nay?
Yay and nay. I just wish they'd colored Lily of the same color every issue.
Well, that's more of a coloring issue, isn't it? It could be spray-on tan.
There you go. Yeah. You know, you gotta stop buying that stuff from Walmart.
I don't know. Who knows? They're okay.
But I assume you like Carly better than Lily?
Yeah. Who doesn't?
Harry.
Okay.
And then Peter.
Well, Peter, now.
He's got a thing for the spray on tan, too.
Yeah, seriously. What is the deal with him and sexually attractive women? I mean, that's just not supposed to be the way he goes, man. It's supposed to be about the brains.
The Parker luck, man. The Parker luck.
The Parker luck makes him go after women that are unachievable.
He just reaches for the stars.
Reach for the sky.
All right, but meanwhile, going along the lines of Lily, there's Bill Hollister and candidate number two. I know that there was Randall Crown. Randall Crown. Okay, there we go. Yeah, so you've got Randall Crown, and then you've got Hollister. First off, who would you vote for? And second of all, is the mayoral race an intriguing storyline in Amazing Spider-Man, or is it just there? And we'll go with Brent first.
I'll vote for Stephen Colbert.
And so can you. Yeah, he's everywhere now, isn't he?
He is?
Yeah, yeah. Is it just there? I mean, is the mayoral campaign just there, or is it actually important?
It might be important since Menace killed one of the people, but I don't know. Sometimes it feels like it's just there.
Right. I mean, it does give something Harry to do, at least.
Screw someone's girl, yeah.
Plus, he also gives the money to Bill Hollister, you know, is actually a major part of his campaign. And for a while, he was taking, you know, bad pictures of Randall Crown that make him look like Hitler. Yeah. I'm not quite sure if those photos could actually happen.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It seemed like that was kind of stretching it.
Just a tad. Just a smidgen. Just a little smidgen, yeah. All right, Gallo, your turn.
I'm kind of going with Brent. It's just there. I mean, so far I haven't really seen anything that's been like, wow, you know, kind of interesting, you know. Back in, I can't remember how far, in the old Spider-Man, there was a similar storyline where they had a mayoral candidate who turned out to be some supervillain. It was a little bit more, it held your attention a little bit more. This is just sort of blah. You know, I'm politics to me, if you put all the politicians in a boat and sank it, I'd be happy. You know, that's how much I care about politics.
So would most of the world, man.
Yeah. But like I said, it's just sort of there. There's nothing really interesting about it. I mean, the most closest thing that was kind of interesting was watching Peter take those bad paparazzi shots, you know, the up nose, you know, I can actually see nose hair in this one, shots and stuff like that. But, you know, again, it was good for a couple of chuckles, but other than that, there's just nothing there. I mean, they're both anti-Spider-Man now, and, you know, who cares, you know? Move on. Give us something else. you know, or at least give something kind of interesting, you know, make one of them, you know, like says, you know, I think it was Richard Rowley, I think it was. He turned out to be the Smasher or something like that, and he had I can't remember. He had like a supervillain in the stable, the Smasher, or something like that.
Yeah.
It was in the Gwen Stacy days.
Okay.
But yeah, you know, give us something. You know, it's just sort of blah. You know,
well,
I get more excitement out of the current presidential candidate race than this.
One would think that the reason they're doing this whole mayoral thing is number one the presidential debate and race. That would be one thing. But another thing is, just to create some sort of further discomfort for Spider-Man, because both of these people are so anti-Spider-Man, it's going to rub off onto the major public of New York City and perhaps lessen his image even farther.
Yeah. So I got a question.
What's up?
Which one's Hillary and which one's Obama?
They killed Hillary.
Yes, they did. Hillary's dead. Randall Crown is Obama.
Okay.
And so can you. Yes, we can. Yeah. And I'm forgetting the name of the roommate yet again, Mr. Policeman.
Vin,
okay, yeah. That's how memorable of a character he is to me, I guess. But Peter does a good thing for me, moving out of the house, because I have no idea why Aunt May actually even put up with him moving back in at his age. So,
well, yeah. I thought you were going to say because you've never done it before.
Well, yeah, that's possible, too. And Brent Cassina, always the comedian. Yeah, always the comedian. I'm working on it, all right? I'm working on it. At least I have a job, unlike a certain Peter Parker, right?
Yeah. Had to stand up for his morals, that bastard.
And that's why you should just say, screw you to morals. That's it. Just throw him out the window. But, yeah, anyway, Vin seems like a nice enough guy. He's got a huge thing for Carly, and Carly barely knows he exists, except for the fact that he's a friend and a buddy. But,
he's got a huge thing for Carly? How do you know? They don't draw him that way.
he's Ron Jeremy in another incarnation.
I'm assuming here. That's all. I'm just assuming because he's
You know what happens when you assume?
What? You make an ass of you and me?
And me.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I like you better when you're awake, Brent.
I'm awake.
Yeah, you're barely awake. But so yeah, Vin, cool supporting character to have as the roommate or yet another roommate on the pile, Brent.
Cool.
What's so cool about him?
He's cool.
What else?
He's on the pile.
I hate you.
I know.
Remember, people need to listen to this.
Oh, right. Damn it.
You're not just fucking with me when you're doing that, okay? It's the listening public that when they hear comments like, he's cool, I guess.
iPods are turning off all over the country.
Uh-huh.
Like when they say I don't turn off my stereo on the Beacon's Bullets.
Well, maybe you should try it one of these times. But you are with the next episode. But anyway, yeah. So, Vin, good character?
Yeah. It's just hard to tell with all the different artists draw him differently. Like, not even Peter, but Vin changes from artist to artist. It's like, wait a minute. Okay, so we have the two cops again. Who's who?
Well, one of them's black and one of them's white, right?
Well, one of them likes Spider-Man, the other one doesn't.
Yeah, but which one's which?
I thought Vin was
Vin's the Hispanic guy.
Last name Gonzalez?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Vin Gonzalez.
Gonzalez, I love guns.
Although that would be no Guns Amore, right? Yeah, but he's another character, though, where depending on who's drawing him, he'll look more Hispanic or more black.
It's like the, what you call it, Lily thing, you know? Too much spray on tan.
Yeah, he's got to weigh off the melatonin.
He's going for the Michael Jackson look.
So, yeah, onward to Chris. Vin, NYP, good or bad?
Character in waiting. He hasn't done anything to warrant my opinion one way or the other of him. He has potential. Right now, as it stands, he's just another roommate on the pile. But he does have a little bit more potential because he's a cop and he does hate Spider-Man and he does have a thing for Carly, who has a thing for Peter, you know. So So there's a lot of potential. But as it stands right now, he's just another roommate on the pile. I'm hoping that'll change, that, you know, that he'll start to shine a little bit.
And Spidey goes through roommates like some people go through cans of soda.
Not like Brent. Yeah. You know? He's living the clean life.
Yeah. Yeah. He's weaning himself off it.
I quit you.
Yes, but I wish I could quit you, Brent.
I knew you were in love with me.
You guys need some alone time? You want me to come back in a little bit?
No. We're good. Don't worry about it. All right. And before we get to our where we think it's going to be in 6 months, let's actually get to the forum comments here, as there were a few, thanks to me posting over in the Amazing Spidercast forums and people actually following the trail. So we'll start with Spider-Avenger. Here we go. I've been enjoying Spider-Man so far. Slott and Guggenheim have been my favorites so far, and the Zeb Wells arc was my least favorite. Well, can't win them all. Glad to have Harry back. Dexter Bennett is okay, but I have no strong feelings for any of the new supporting cast, same for the new villains. Over the next half of the year, I'd like to see the Black Cat or the Human Torch show up as a story arc. Maybe touch more on Betty's theory that Spider-Man might have gone nuts after Civil War. At the moment, I can't say if it was worth it or not, since it's only been 6 months. And that's Spider-Avenger. Hey, you think Spider-Man went crazy after Civil War?
That's an interesting thing.
He made a deal with the devil.
Maybe he's in a room drooling in a bucket, you know, staring out of the window, and this is all in his mind.
That would be so dark and yet so delicious, because that would be the best way to make everything just disappear.
Yeah.
You'd be happy with this.
Or it could be this could be the scene elsewhere ending, you know, this is all in a looking in a snow globe, you know, and he's actually just sitting there shaking it and thinking about his life as if this had happened.
Just as long as Mary Jane doesn't walk out of the shower.
Yeah, exactly.
I had the
maybe that would be a good thing. Then all the fanboys were like, oh my God, Mary Jane walking out of a shower. Wow.
I'd rather not. I'd seriously rather not. Ugh. But yeah, I do agree with Spider-Avenger also that it has only been 6 months. We've got to see more of where this is going. But we're on the right track, I guess. Brent, would you like to read a Spider-Stuke, or however the hell you pronounce it?
Spider-Stuke.
Yeah, the next guy who's on here. Spider-Stuke, or...
Oh.
Yeah. Spidey-Stuke.
No, go ahead. I don't have it up.
So get it up!
That's what she said.
I was totally setting you up for that. Brent, the floor is yours.
Spidey-Stuke. In my opinion, the Brain Trust has done an okay job, but nothing fantastic. Some ideas were innovative, but the Freak storyline was horrible and made people want to quit the book. Just like me. 61 made me want to quit reading the book and wanted to castrate Marvel. One better writer, worse than the others. Dan Slott by far enjoys arcs, and the dream team of him and Romita Jr. for New Ways to Die looks to be the biggest must-need arc for many fans this year. I've hated every one of Bob Gale's issues, and his comments before Brand New Day putting me off from buying the book. But I've resisted that urge. Many of the issues have been great and really enjoyed the jackpot issues. I'm looking forward to the annual coming out soon, featuring her. She better be MJ or part of her, as many internet fans have been theorizing. Favorite art team. Enjoyed Kitson and LaRocca's, but Romita Jr.'s who I'm holding out for. Jarring to see so many art teams. To me, a good comic is a good book with one or two writers over a good amount of time and a good selection of artists, but Brand New Day isn't impressing me with art switches every month. Marvel needs to make a team and stick with it, either LaRocca or Kinston as artist and Slaughter Wells as writer. So far, Brand New Day has been okay arc, but with me it's has middle par stories and what I believe to be one of Marvel's top books. Supporting cast. I've not been impressed by much of the supporting cast in the book, as we have not seen enough of it to have a good enough chance. Only people I have liked out of the supporting cast have been Harry, Betty, and of course JJJ. I completely detest Libby, whatever her name is, and Dexter Bennett. Better have a heart attack soon, as I've had him dull and just annoying, and recent issues involving him, Carr, and spoilers, his mystery girlfriend, have shown why the Daily Bugle was awesome and why the DB is such a piece of shit. To me, Peter's supporting cast was best in college and at the Daily Bugle when he was with Whispers MJ.
MJ.
Whispers MJ. No, I thought it was like Whispers Go-Go? What?
But before you finish reading it here, I am along the lines of him when they're talking about picking a team on artists, because if they do go to a long story arc, like a 6-issue arc or a 12-issue arc, I would very much rather have one or two artists as opposed to 5 or 6. So I do agree on that. Yeah. For now, though, okay, if they're 3 or 4 story issues per arc, I'm fine with multiples.
To me, we should have more time with Avengers before One More Day, as it was a great new dynamic, and I found it absolutely hilarious when Peter chucked Wolverine out the window, and we should have had a lot more of time before Civil War occurred. New villains, which is best. Menace was great, but a Goblin ripoff, still enjoyable. Jackpot to me isn't a villain, a freak was just horrible and ridiculous. I miss the old Spidey enemies, even with the Vulture, were better than the Freak arc. Favorite villain has Billin. My favorite billion.
Billions.
My favorite billing was when I was charged $50.
My favorite villain has been Mr. Negative, who's had great potential but could even rival the Kingpin if written well. Where do you want to see it go in the next half year? I want either one of these things to happen. Old villains returning with Gale gone from the Brain Trust, or the whole thing to be retcon nut so that...
Wait, hold on. Yeah, or the whole thing to be retconned nut.
Nut won't happen, so old enemies and more MJ plot, which I hope to see her and Peter possibly date again. Finally, was it all worth it? Hell no.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion there, sir. So far, I think it's been worth it, but if they continue to do nothing on the whole Spider-Tracer arc, then perhaps it will be not worth it. That's what I have to say about that. All right, onward to...
P-H-H.
Yeah.
Or is that no, we call him...
Yes, P-H-H. How has the Brain Trust been working for you? Yes, this has been a brilliant move by Marvel to keep the title fresh and lively. I think that the writers are trying to top one another, and that is a good thing. One writer you like better or worse than the others. Slott has been as close to perfection as possible. Who has been your favorite art team? Very close, but I'm going to give it to McNiven. Martin is very close second, and Bachalo third. Sad to lose Peru during the series. Peru?
The colorist for LaRocca.
Oh, okay. All right, gotcha.
Because remember, we were talking to him about Iron Man last episode.
Right. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, no, I agree with that as well. It was very sad to lose him because, well... Peru was very, very good, and may he rest in peace. Is it jarring to go through so many art teams? He says, it's very interesting with the art changes, but when you find someone good, you really want them on the book forever, but that isn't going to happen, so you learn to deal with it. And as a reader that hasn't explored that much artist outside of my comfort zone, it is interesting to see the different art styles. Does the current supporting cast appeal? He says, don't think that the supporting cast have been that prominent as in pre-Brand New Day, and it's too early to tell. I'm glad to see Chris is reading along at least so he can point out when I'm wrong.
Hey, there's a reason why you asked me along.
Of the new villains, who works the best for you? I really like Mr. Negative and close second Screwball. Can't wait for their next appearances. I agree with Screwball. Screwball was great. Where do you want to see Amazing Spider-Man go over the next half year? I think that we are ready for some old villains to return to the Spideyverse, and it looks like we're going to, because it looks like in New Ways to Die, we're going to get some Green Goblin action going on, which should be fun. And finally, was it all worth it? Very much so. My level of Spidey goodness has increased many fold. And that was by... So I thank him very much for that, and I'm not going to stop calling him that.
If we ever meet him at a convention, we're going to be like, hey...
I've met him. He's a good guy. He's a really nice guy.
Oh, good. Okay.
You
should let him know that his name is pronounced...
At least on our show.
Yeah. And we're going to start pronouncing you Weebhead from now on. But, all right, so it's time to ask the important questions that were asked in the other one that we haven't asked yet. Number one, where do you want to see Brand New Day go in the next 6 months? And was it worth it? And both questions shall be asked first to the guy who it's still only 9:30 for him.
Brent? No.
No, in Brent's mind, it's 9:30, but in real life, it's 12:30.
Whether it's been worth it all or not, I'm going to say no. The way it stands right now, I've not seen anything that's really been like earth shattering or like really just grabbed me. There's it's not been worth it. What I'd like to see in the next 6 months is what I've said since the One More Day, Brand New Day was starting. They're going to start to wrap this up. We're going to come to some type of conclusion in about a year from the beginning of Brand New Day. We're going to see the what's going to be coming from. We're going to see Mephisto, and we're going to see something coming out of this. I think right now, at the halfway point, they said they had a moratorium on the old villains. No one could use any of the old villains until like their second or third arc, which is about right now what we're seeing. I don't know if anybody's read the latest one, but we did see some old Spider-Man villains come back. I won't say who because I don't know how we are with spoilers on this episode. But we're going to start seeing some of those other ones pop up. I'm sure we're going to see Ock and other people like that. So, but like I said, the next 6 months where I'm seeing this go, I'm going to start seeing them start put some of the pieces together so we can finish this Brand New Day experiment and get back to the original continuity.
Well, I'm not quite sure if that's going to happen, Chris, but...
Yeah, and one can hope.
Yeah. One can hope and dream.
Eternal.
One can hope and dream, but for now, as long as Mr. Quesadilla is in charge, I doubt we're going to get any changes in that aspect.
Well, again, one could only hope.
Hang on, I still want to see my dream of Quesada as editor-in-chief of Marvel and Jimmy Palmiotti as editor-in-chief of DC.
Well, could have just a flop. We can send the day over to Marvel, and we can send Joe to DC.
Yeah. Next question. Brand New Day. No comment. Next question. Yes or no? Yes or no? Yeah, doubt it, man. Highly doubt it. Get a pass on that. All right, Mr. Cassina, where you wanted to go in the next 6 months, and was it worth it?
I want Chris to say it's worth it, so that's where I wanted to go. No, but I want to see the Spider-Tracer thing wrapped up and explained, and I want answers to Harry and MJ, and that's pretty much about it, and good Spider-Man stories.
And you think it was worth it, obviously.
Yeah.
Cool. I would agree.
Maybe not the way it went about, but, you know, we've discussed that to death.
Right. We kind of don't have to do it again because we already know our opinions on it, but...
Do you want to do it again?
No, I'm fine. Chris Johnson isn't on the call, so we can't talk about one more day and how bad it was.
Why do you always have to make it dick jokes? What's up with that?
What? Johnson.
See, you just made a dick joke.
It's his last name, man. and the Forever Lost episode of Amazing Spider-Cast where you keep mentioning that Chris is down in a hole.
All right.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Takei. Was it all worth it? I say yes, it was worth it for now. I think we've gotten better Spidey stories out of it. I think things are more polished and more refined right now. However, things have got to start getting moving on the Spider-Tracer arc, as we've stated, and then it will certainly be worth it. I'm glad that Aunt May is not 500 years old anymore. She seems to actually be able to walk around by herself and not have to worry about other people carrying her, which is nice. I'm sure she's going to start looking like a mummy again once J.R. Jr. draws her. But, all right, well, that's the one thing J.R. Jr. does not draw well, all right? Because Aunt May has looked mummified every time that he's ever drawn her. The cheekbones. Oh, my God, the cheekbones. Villains.
Well, how old is she?
She's about 103. I don't know. But villains, I hope in the next 6 months we're going to get more of the classic villains. I'm sure we're going to get Doc Ock, because I would love to see Dan Slott or Guggenheim's take on Doc Ock. So I'm sure they'll do an amazing job on it. And, I'd like to see perhaps Carly and Peter do some Bow Chicka Wow Wow, because he hasn't done that in a while now that he's, you know, no longer married. And
you know what's weird is that they said they didn't want to show Peter, you know, sleeping around and stuff, but they have Mary Jane in that last issue in her underwear crawling in bed with a guy. What the fuck?
Well, she's Mary Jane, and she's a supporting character. And next question. They only did that just to say, hey, Mary Jane moved on, but hey, does she remember everything? Bum, bum, bum. She might. We don't know. She hinted at it.
I took it as a big F you to the fans who still hate what they did. They say, watch this. Let's really piss them off.
No, the biggest F you would have been Mary Jane eating wheat cakes with her new hubby.
Oh, you're an evil man.
And her to make a comment like, these wheat cakes are so much better than the ones May used to make.
Evil.
Yeah, so was it worth
you're it? You're more than just evil. You're evil.
Yes, I'm evil because the first part of my name is E, so that works. But where else do I want to see it go in the next 6 months? I want to see some Black Cat action because it'd be nice to have her back around and actually see him associate a little bit more with the new Avengers since he's in them. I mean, sure, we saw him and Doctor Strange and Wolverine. Doctor Strange part was apparently out of continuity in the first place because, you know, Doc is not around anymore. And Wolvie is part of it, so I guess you could say that part was good. But I don't know. Just in general, have fun with the book. I just want to see some fun. And so far, I've been getting that, so that's why it's been worth it for me. So at this point, I believe we can wrap things up. Chris, you got any other appearances you want to pimp on any Spider-Casts or anything like that?
Well, I'm always out there on the Spider-Cast with Chris. We're doing the review of Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man. We're doing like five-issue chunks. We're reviewing those old issues. And we've got one coming down the pike where we're going to review Chris's very favorite Spider-Man villain. Everybody knows who that is.
Hypno-Hustler.
Yeah, baby!
Yay!
Joe Quesadilla? His favorite.
No, we didn't say jerkwad. We say villain.
Okay.
But,
gotcha.
Oh. Those are great. You know, those are on the Amazing Spider-Cast feed, so check them out. They're good old 70s books. They're a lot of fun. The reviews are pretty good tongue-in-cheek. You know, Chris goes over each issue, gives a great synopsis, and then I put my 2 cents in, and then we move on.
Sweet.
And like I said, when we do the Hypno-Hustler episode, I think people need to tune in for that one because that is just going to be one rip-roaring fun episode. Well, it's shaping up to be a really good one.
When you get to Rocket Racer, let me know. Okay,
the big wheel. Don't forget the big wheel.
Oh, the big wheel.
Well, we got picked on, I think it was for the episode when we did about the Arkansas Razorback. We got picked for one of the episodes of the week from, I forget which.
The Fixer?
Yeah.
Sweet.
So, they're a lot of good fun. So, yeah. Other than that, you can always find me on the boards, the CGS boards, the Amazing Spider-Cast boards. Drop a line. Tell me what you think. Do you want me to shut up or do you want me to keep talking?
Well, I would say that your stuff is definitely worth at least 2 cents. I'll give you that much.
There you go.
All right. All right.
Before or after taxes?
After.
Okay.
Yeah. And, Mr. Cassina, you want to pimp any BK's bullets?
We should have one out by the time this thing comes out.
Yes, indeedy. And what was that on again? I forget.
Oh, you and I did a review of The Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was fun. Turned out
glad
to be,
you thought so.
It turned out to be about 45 minutes to an hour, so that's not too bad.
Yeah. We're shooting for 20, you know?
Yeah, well, for us, that equals 20 minutes, man.
Oh, Sean did say he's finally going to play the Smallville one.
Hey, bitchin'.
When the Smallville episode comes out.
I can't wait to hear you talk about...
1 year?
Yeah, 1 year of BK's bullets and...
when it's a year and a half. Almost a two.
And talk about how much you enjoyed the premiere and how much you're looking forward to the next episode.
Yeah.
On DVD. All right, but you can check out the old BK's Bullets over at RagingBullets.com, and obviously the BK's Bullets here on the Comic Timing feed. It's BKSpeed.com/Comic Timing. And if you'd like to check out all of my rants on Rant Timing, you can go through those, because I posted a few in the last couple weeks, and I think they've been good. One of which on Chuck Dixon, and the title of that was DC Stop Dixon Around. All right. And one more time here before the episode wraps up. We are proudly sponsored by HeroesCorner.com, the special for the month, 1776 special. For every $17.76 spent, you will get one free comic, which is a excellent, excellent, excellent July 4th special for Heroes Corner. So thank them kindly for giving us free stuff. And the summer special, yet again, is two graphic novels, trade paperback or hardcover, along with the monthly title of the same series. And you'll get that monthly title for free. So if you buy two Spider-Mans and then you buy your Amazing Spider-Man, well, then you get the Amazing Spider-Man for free. So that is going to kick arse. And the Comic Timing specials for July, if you use the promo code BROOKLYN, that's Brooklyn, 5% off on your first-time order at Heroes Corner. And the Comic Timing special discounts of the month, Avengers The Initiative number 17, regular price of $2.99, you're getting for $1.79. Blue Beetle number 31, also for $179, and Back to Brooklyn number 1 is going to get a 75% discount, so you're only going to pay 75 cents for Back to Brooklyn number 1. That's Jimmy Palmiotti and Garth Ennis' new book out of Image Comics. So I thank HeroesCorner.com very much for the sponsorship. Go ahead and check them out. Best customer service around, no question about it. HeroesCorner.com. So
very nice.
Yes, indeed. And actually, one more quick thing that I want to throw in here, as Comic Addiction needs your help, and, well, I think I'm going to let Chris Parton explain it to you as best he can right here. So here is the promo he asked me to play. So, Chris, take it away.
Hey, comic fans and addicts. This is Chris Parton from Comic Addiction. You may have noticed that Comic Addiction's website, found at www.comicaddiction.com, is no longer there. Have no fear. Angela, Anthony, Derek, Ed, Guy, Isaac, Idea, Rob, Paul, and I are still around. It can now be found at our new web address, www.thecomicaddiction.com. The site will be slowly returning each day with new reviews, features, editorials, interviews, and yes, podcasting, as well as an archive of content we've put together over the last 2 years. We're no longer just Comic Addiction, we're The Comic Addiction, where it's not a hobby, it's an addiction.
So yes, you did indeed hear right. Head on over to thecomicaddiction.com, the new home of Comic Addiction, and certainly help out Chris in getting the word out about the new website, as Chris is a really cool dude, and I like supporting any member of the Comics Podcast Network that asks for assistance, and he is certainly one of those people that needs our help right now. So, hey, Chris. Hope this helps. All right, folks, we're done. So the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geekspeak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasters over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley, and please send us your iTunes reviews and dig us on dig.com. So once again, for Left Coast Man and Right Coast Man, I'm being love to see you, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics. Similar to how we handed it would say that if I could actually talk.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, tell me about it. All right, here we go. Brent, your turn. Thoughts on the DB. Okay, Brent, thank you very much for your time. I'm sorry, Mr. Cena is not available. Will you please try your call again?
Sorry.
That's fine.
I totally drifted off and fell asleep for like 2 minutes there.
Wait, serious?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Come on.
Well, I'll notch it up here. I don't get them too boring for him.
What the hell's your name? Jim Segulin? Jesus, man.
Sorry.
That's been a funny long day. How about that?
Yeah, it's been a long day, dude.
Yeah, I know. Grab some soda, man. Come on. Jesus.
I'm cutting out soda. I'm trying to be healthy.
Okay, we're an hour into the show and you're already falling asleep.
Let me sit up. I can pull up another hour. What was the question?
All right. The question was what do you do in a fire? Stop, drop, and roll? Or no, okay. The question was, what do you think of the DBs so far? And Dexter Bennett, good character, bad character? Where do you want to see J. Jonah going? That sort of stuff. God, I fell asleep again. Fuck this. Jesus, man. We're gonna have to start doing the show earlier, I guess. I don't know. Brent! Yo!
Wake up! Brent, time for school! Wake up!
We hear you breathing in the background, dude. Come on.
What?
Oh, dear. You fell asleep again, fucker.
Sorry.
Jeez.
You know what was weird? The last time, your voice got really soft, and I was like, kinda just drifting off because it was a monotone or whatever, and then I woke, like, I paid more attention. It was really loud in my ear.
Oh, dear God, man. See, that, now you're just ruining the whole, like, late night vibe you usually get here, because actually falling asleep is not what needs to happen.
Sorry. What are we doing again?
Oh, my God.
Put your shoes back on, some really tight shoes on, and maybe they'll keep you awake.
Grab something caffeinated or something, man, because, I mean, if you keep driving, you know, drifting off like this, then it's going to be, you know, not exactly that good. I don't know.
As long as he doesn't start talking in his sleep.
Put your clothes back on.
No, Mikalba, I will not have... You will not have your way with me.
Look, Spider-Man, stop looking at me that way. Your eyes. You shouldn't be sexually attracted to men. No, no.
Spider-Man, I don't want your real lips.
Ian, how can I tell you my true feeling for you?
Oh, fucking Christ. Yeah, I knew you were going to go there eventually, Chris.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Dear. You might be, because I don't know how much longer this is going to take to record with him falling asleep like this. All right, what time is it now? It's 11:44. We're an hour and 15 in. About, you know, 5 minutes of which I gotta kill because of Brent falling asleep. Or what do you want to do? Cap it in an hour and a half or something like that, so you can actually stop falling asleep on the show. What do you want to do?
Yeah. You guys can still go.
Yeah, I can
just go.
Yeah, dude. Come on, man. All right. Let me ask you what I was asking you last time you were awake. What do you think the chances are of Jackpot being a Skrull?
Oh, I heard that. I wasn't asleep when you said that. I don't know what happened.
Yes. No, I asked you, and then you didn't say anything for a while, and then you must have fallen asleep the minute after I said that or something, because...
I think I did, actually.
I'm that interesting, apparently. So, what are the chances of Jackpot being a Skrull? I just heard myself again, so I assume it's probably the location of your mic, Brent. But Gallo, yeah. Well, now I'm actually starting to fall asleep here. That's not good.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, no. I don't have enough caffeine in me right now.
Woo!
Oh God, it feels like 2 o'clock.
Yes, it does. It's like 12:20, and I still got a pack after this.
I've never seen any of these motherfuckers. Yeah, I've seen.
It feels like 9:30 to me. No.
Yes, that's because it is 9:30 for you, Chris.
Oh, then that explains it.
Oh yeah, yeah. Look at me. My tones are just three hours behind yours. All right. Yeah, get the yawn out now before you start reading.
Like, that'll help.
Yeah. All right. Spidey Stay U. Actually, hold on. Let's call it Spidey Stee UK. That's the easiest way for me to pronounce his name.
Has a brain trust been working for you? In my opinion, Dream Press. I swear to God, I'm half dyslexic.
What was that? The train breast?
No, it said drain, like in the sink.
Drain breast.
I don't know what a breast is, but it sounds cool.
Holy crap. We both broke.
Oh, let's not read this.
All right, here we go. All right, okay, one more time.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to turn to Chris to read these. Jesus.
Chris, your turn.
You guys have sent me the link. Is this on the Spider-Man?
It's on the Comic Timing ones, but Brent, try one more time.
All right.
Said to lose Peru. Sad to lose Peru. fine. Besides Chris, Chris Shaw.
Chris is not Equinox. Remember?
I know. Well, no, because hopefully we didn't sound too far asleep all episode long for you folks out there in podcasting. Because I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm feeling a little woozy, feeling a little drowsy, a little dribbly. All right.
And Brent asleep again?
Now it's time for some smooth jazz here on Comic Con. Brent? I'm not quite sure if he's fucking with me right now. I think he's fucking with me.
All right, what?
Yeah, there you go. That's better. That's better. All right, folks.
We're done.
How many times did Brent fall asleep during that one?
Shut up.
No,
straightforward. Just shut up.
He didn't. He didn't fall asleep because he was hosting. He only falls asleep when he's sidekicking. That's all. Yeah, but you got any other BKs on RB or on CT? Either of them? No. All right, we're done.
That was fun.
Yeah. But then the episode itself came out to about an hour and a half, so that's not too bad. Yeah. Once we take out all the snoring and the pausing, I'm sure it'll be less time, too.
Good night.
No excuse. Good night. See ya.
I think the only way it would be better is if Brent said good night and then fell asleep without bothering to hang up.
For some reason, I just image him laying on his bed right now in a dark room, just talking like, "Please, let's
have the light on
so I can go to sleep."
Yes,
I have the light on.
Yeah. You sound so injured right now.
Go away. Hey, sorry, Chris. I'm so lively tonight.
Oh, man, dude, you gonna be like this all summer long?
I don't know, man.
Have to start doing them early or something.
Yeah, we're gonna have to start doing them earlier, I think.
Fucking Christ, dude.
You're ruining our late night vibe.
Shut up. That's alright, no big deal.
And Brent asleep again?
I totally drifted off and fell asleep for like 2 minutes there.
Wait, serious?
Yeah.